From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. I'd like to take just a moment to let the audience in on a little behind the curtains here today. Jack Stein had a little bit of a medical emergency mid-show. I wanted to let everybody know Jack Stein is just fine. And against his insistence and intent, he's been asked to just take a seat on the bench.
Take it easy.
Yeah. Cool your jets. You know, he loves to be here, loves to do what he does. But we're going to give Jack the rest of the day off. And if needed, I don't think it's going to be the case. We're going to err on the side of caution. Far too many in our lives push themselves too hard. Don't listen to their body when it says something. And Jack's listening. Even when we have to make him listen, he's listening. That being said, I want to welcome to this show a man who needs no introduction, but, I'm giving him one anyway.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the legendary John.
Yes.
Francis. Is it Francis? Curly. Yes.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome, my friend.
Not the name my parents gave me, but I'll accept it. Is it?
Well, can I ask what it
is? Manager looking to bring in the left-hander.
From the minor time in Clayton, Washington, where he pitched 72 innings last year with a 5-1 record, 19 saves.
John, how are you, my friend?
Good. By the way, you said Jack is just fine. Is that by Jack Stein fine? Like those standards or like a normal human being fine?
Actually, trained medical professionals have deemed Jack fine.
Oh,
air quotes,
God.
Fine. I'm not sure okay. The psychological assessment is back yet.
Good.
But I think he said the words TV, camera, woman, monkey, whale, which means he's cognitively superior to all of us.
He's all there. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to get a chance to get on the show with you because I get on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and Jack normally filibusters the thing, and I never get a chance to chat with you. So, Spike, thank you very much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, whenever I have a guest in my home, the first thing I'll ask is, hey, what do you want to do? What do you want for dinner? Why don't you pick? So, John, you've been given the show rundown for what we had planned for the 2 o'clock hour, and as the guest of the Jack and Spike Show, and by the way, what's your middle name again?
It's John Michael, John Michael Curley Jr. John Michael Patrick Timothy Zorro was my confirmation name.
Zorro, and the lost saint.
Father Brian wouldn't accept it. So it's like, come up with
good Irish
else,
kid Curley. From the Mid-Atlantic, from Philadelphia, city of brotherly love.
Yeah, no, I read all the stories. Any way you want to go, pick them, take them. I've done some research.
I'm assuming you, being a man of tradition, John, are a big fan of the UW Cherry Blossoms.
I love the Cherry Blossoms there. And I was in Washington, D.C., working for CBS, the Cherry Blossoms that bloom there. Absolutely gorgeous. It's limited time only. And they are not only breathtaking to the eyes, but to the nose as well. And highly recommend everybody get a chance to sort of embrace this treat that Mother Nature gives us for just a brief time. Because the winds kick in or the rain.
And then they wash away the dream.
Washes away. Go look at it. That, the Tulip Festival, even though the traffic is horrible, find another time to go. But take it in because, again, a gift from nature.
And an international gift of love. I know the cherry blossoms in D.C. were a gift of the Japanese government initially, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That's right.
Is that the same situation at the UW? Is that where those initial cherry blossoms, cherry trees came from?
I would assume so, too.
They're not indigenous.
No, they're not. But what's the Eastern problem? Eastern people Eastern complaining there. That there's traffic? Is that what they're upset about?
That's exactly the problem. People are so short-sighted and self-centered. That, you know, why is it so busy to get over to the U today? Well, because we have a natural gift of nature, a gift from the Lord above.
Yeah.
A national, a local treasure that we want to enjoy and share with one-time visitors to Seattle, maybe potential students to the U who are coming here to tour campus. Most smart recruiters will have the kids come in during Cherry Blossom Festival.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You come and see the campus. Come and see, especially with athletes. They're closing the book on so many athletes. They're closing this deal, getting these players. You don't know how many.
Whoa.
How many football players?
I can't imagine. Yeah, they're going to be overwhelmed.
I was leaning toward Georgia at LSU, but them cherry blossoms, they got me.
It is gorgeous. They're framed by Mount Rainier.
It is one of the most beautiful campuses on the face of the earth. It really is.
I'll tell you something. When people talk about waiting in line and did traffic backing up, I remember when the Krispy Kreme donuts opened up in Issaquah and the line was 2.5 hours or something like that. I'm thinking, why are people really complaining about that? You're going to put time in to go get a donut. I understand, but it was this weird thing. The lines were all the way down. They had police guiding people in. The same thing that happens with Krispy Kreme over near Bellevue. There's a big line there for people to get in there. So what is it? Who's complaining? Is it the paper? The people are mad. The traffic was backed up. I mean,
you know, Reddit, yeah. Redditors.
That's exactly. Okay. That's the best question I've heard all day, because that's who we seem to give the most weight to a public opinion these days. Anybody who's got the time, strength, and intelligence to click on a keyboard, become a keyboard warrior, keyboard proud, keyboard strong, and lob this. You know what? I am so angered some days by the fact that the excessively vocal minority in our culture seems to get all the ink, all the attention, all the airtime.
Well, look what we're doing. We're doing it too. We're giving them right now.
But we're giving them grief.
I know, but okay, still, by even bringing it up.
I mean, I fell for it again!
Yeah, we do that all the time. You know, we talk about this. We play TikTok people, and they're screaming about this. And it's like, well, just don't put them on. But it's the stuff on the hard left or the extreme left or the right or whatever. Those are always the, but everybody else in the middle just going about their life, right?
Here, here.
So, but it's always the stuff, it's the plane that lands with a broken tire that gets all the attention, yet 45,000 flights take off and land safely every single day.
Thank you.
And nobody pays any attention to that. Nope. But again, we are in the business of news. And I guess the news is that people are upset about the traffic. But you know what? Take a deep breath, go out there. Maybe, I don't know, walk, ride your bike, or have somebody drop you off over there and go take a look at the cherry blossoms. Again, make it an annual event where you take the kids and get out there and walk among the cherry blossoms and maybe take pictures of it. It's great opportunity, although I don't appreciate when people do Christmas cards that have springtime or Hawaii as the background. I'm sorry, but it should be outlawed by the federal government.
Santa hats on a beach in Maui.
I hate that. You know, put a shirt on and bundle up and go somewhere in the snow. I don't want to be seeing you with your mildly tanned family and then get me that Christmas card to find out how great their life is compared to mine.
Do you write a letter with your card about how your family has been this year?
I did. I wrote a parody letter a number of years ago about how horrible things were happening in my family. But I made it seem like that. I go through the whole list of all these horrible things. And then at the end, just saying, but this year's going to be even better.
That will explain why I was sending no gifts this year, as you can imagine.
People took it seriously, Spike. I'm sending another letter out. I was kidding. I'm kidding. My son does not have a heroin addiction. He's 11. Good God.
He's responsible in his use. He's only 11. Hey, let me ask you this about the story coming out of Kirkland, that they're going to have to shut down the intersection of Lake Street and Kirkland Avenue for about 8 weeks for some civic renovation, for some public works. And it's going to affect the local businesses, as closures do. There's talk that the state is going to reach out and try to help these businesses in any way, shape, or form that they can to try to survive the eight-week closure. Mm-hmm. You think it's on the city to help the businesses that are impacted by this to make it through
absolutely.
This time?
Absolutely. Just show you some ideas. So they were originally going to do this during the summer, where people are walking around and there's more business. They were going to do it during the 4th of July.
Yeah, can we roll it into the 4th of July weekend? That's perfect.
That shows you completely how tone deaf they were. So the city pushed back on that and said, no, how about do it? If you're going to do it this time, they do it to fix the sewer because of the overflow of the water. They got giant ponds that you have to jump over. I get that. Plus also they want to do the scramble, press the button and everybody can go. That's fine with that. What they should do further, the city council should put a fund aside. So if they know, when they see this funding, they normally have these five-year plans in this funding for streets and sidewalks. So they know 5 years out. What they should start doing is putting some money away as sort of a rainy day fund. And Salt Lake did this. And they said, okay, I'll tell you what, for each one of these small businesses that are impacted, you have under this amount of employees, we will give you a grant. You don't have to pay it back. It's going to be $3,000 or $5,000 because we realize this is going to directly affect your business. So the money is set aside ahead of time. So as you know, you have a five-year. 5 years out, we're going to going to take the sidewalks and do this and that. Start to build up a little rainy day fund and have that money there. And then the cities would go on, fill out the application, say, this is my business. These are my employees I have. This is my normal monthly revenue. And then they get, you know, a slice of something. But absolutely, the city is closing down. They're, oh, we're going to give you stickers and signs. It's still going to screw things up for them. And a lot of these businesses depend, really depend on that cash register ringing every single day in order to have things work. So money aside, have it there. And then when you have to do something like this, then you want to mitigate the problem with some grant funds.
So I remember when my wife was born.
But not the state.
Not the state.
No. You have to make each one of these cities responsible for their own behavior. You have to be able to be at the city council in there. The council should be doing this. The state shouldn't come in because the council's not planning ahead. I don't know anybody on that city council in Kirkland. I'm sure they're good people. But the state, don't have the state come in. Don't take the money from one little city or town that's doing well and putting money aside and then take care of somebody else that's not doing their proper work. But don't go to the state.
I remember when my wife was born and raised in Burien. They remember that main street, 152nd in Burien, between Ambaum and Pacific Coast or Pacific Highway. They closed that street down for almost 2 years, a good year and a half.
Yeah.
And so many local businesses that had been there for generations just couldn't weather the storm.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if they had some forethought. I mean, this was a
They didn't close it down because your wife was born there. I mean, it wasn't that
difficult
of a
they
birth,
built, they built,
it?
They
it
built the historical museum to the Truman Pleasant Mrs. O'Neill.
Oh, I thought her mother was in labor for that one. Okay, confused the two.
I need to be clear in my detailing.
No,
the story.
It does. It just really crushes these businesses. And again, the fact that they wanted to do it during 4th of July.
Yeah, yeah.
Whose idea was that?
And it benefits the community to have these improvements, whether it be through sewer drainage or better sidewalks, better safer crosswalks. That's the price you pay for progress. That's the price
you
pay to evolve as a municipality. And I like how you plan to put some money aside, plan ahead, be responsible. You want your kid to do that. Least you can do is ask your city to do the same. I hope, and recognize
these businesses. They gave them little stickers, little decals they're supposed to stick in their window. They're going to put up signs and stuff like that. You should do other things as well. Or if you want to reduce what they have to pay the city for that time, because again, there's a direct effect upon their revenue.
Yeah.
And these businesses, they don't have a whole lot of money sitting aside. If they're working on small margins, they depend on that register to ring at a regular rate every single day. If they start to see a 30% reduction in their gross receipts, that really has a big impact on these guys. You saw what happened in Burien. You talked about the businesses that closed down. There's some really small businesses in there, and there's a Turkish restaurant. That guy's had that business for a long time. It's going to impact his ability to be able to, you know, pay the bills.
And these are businesses that just survived the pandemic and what they all went through to stay in business for that.
Right?
Nobody's got a big war chest. Nobody's got coffers full for a rainy day anymore. You have
most
to really make
don't.
Sure.
Yeah. Most don't.
John, now this is something that I know will never affect you, but there's a story today that the Washington courts are not fining convicted sex buyers. This is from Crosscut. Now, a sex buyer, and I know, of course, you'll allow me to bring up the speed on this story because it has nothing to do with you or how you live your life. I know that.
Okay.
When someone is soliciting on a Seattle street, maybe you're on Aurora Avenue between, I don't want to point too fine a finger on it, but 105th and 145th, where it seems to me most of the sex workers tend to work. Apparently, the city has not been fining the people that have been caught, prosecuted, and convicted of looking for love at all the wrong prices.
Right. So that used to be, they had that in place where they would go after the Johns, right?
I didn't want to say that word. I think it's pejorative and I don't even want to associate with it. But yes, they're called Johns. No relation.
Right. So you have the supply side, the demand side. So they thought they would go after the demand side. They did enough of that. So they have undercover cops who would go out there and dress up, walk the streets, and catch the guys. They did that for a little while. I think because of staffing, they weren't able to keep it going. So they sort of went away from that. Do you think if you were to be fined in some way that you would stop the behavior?
I think you probably could. If you have a guy who's trying to squirrel away money, hide money from his family to go take care of this proclivity, and all of a sudden he's got that rainy day fund is now going to the court system, he'd probably get out of the business a little faster. I think without consequence, people don't learn lessons. Most often the consequence that works is a financial hit.
So there's a couple ways of attacking this. You could do public shaming where the people's faces could be present. I mean, if you want, you definitely know that they did this. Then they'd have to be brought to trial to be found guilty before you'd make the pictures public.
Right.
And basically try to shame them into the behavior. The other part of it is just legalizing prostitution, which I've been a big fan of for a long time. If you legalize it, you take the black market out, you make it safer. You realize it's the oldest profession in the world other than talk show host. And although they're both very similar.
Very, very similar skill sets. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Just, yes. Fake like you're having a good time.
Convincing people to like you.
Yeah. For just for a short amount of time. Just say 3 hours a day. Right? Yeah.
But if you legalized it, and those that wanted to be in it would be in it, and you'd be licensed, and it would be safer, and then you would hopefully be able to take the money and the resources and direct it more towards the underage sex industry that is just blowing up in the United States.
Heard that horrible story of a couple weeks ago, a month ago, the gentleman from Federal Way who recruited those two kids off online in Oregon. And brought them up here to sex traffic.
One of them was
Aurora.
11 years old,
right. To John's point, if it's legalized, that type of opportunity is gone. Completely
yes.
gone. John,
yes.
John, I know you. Oh, God, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I have a friend of mine who is an under, I don't think he might be getting out of the business. His job was to fly all around the world. He may be listening right now. And he negotiates. He sits down with the people and says, I need 10 girls under the age of 12. I want 30 boys under the age of 14. And then he leaves and comes back. They bring the money in. And then that's when the authorities go in and get these guys. Now, they're only getting the small guys that are getting the money.
Mm-hmm.
But then he asked, I said, how dangerous is that? He said, that's not as dangerous as flying back and have to testify against these guys. That's
wow.
really when it's dangerous. He showed me the pictures. They put him in this bag. You can't see his face. You can't see his hands or his feet, anything. It's just this gigantic, like, sack he is in. And I'm sure he's just covered in all sorts of body armor. But I said, you know, you could die doing this. And he said, I know, but I'm good with the Lord. I'd rather do this and save a child's life. I would give up my life for these kids. I said, what's it like looking into these people's eyes? He said, it seems like such a cliche. You know, I looked into his eyes and I could see no soul, but these people, they have no soul, and they're basically trading human lives, children's lives for the sex trade operation. And again, because of the open borders, expect to see the thing just continue to skyrocket.
And you talked about the cost of enforcing and protecting these kids and our streets and our cities and the lost revenue of this not being a public a profession. You know the story of the Seattle Seamstress Union, right?
Yes, right. Going back early into the beginning of the city, yes.
Right, during the Yukon Gold Rush years. Mm-hmm. Seattle was a port that was the last stop before the great Yukon Gold Rush in Alaska. And it was a town built on prospecting goods and supplies. And we would supply the miners to go up to the Alaska and Yukon. And when they struck it rich and they brought the gold home, they brought it back to Seattle and they spent it in Seattle on bars and prostitution. The city realized that all this gold was coming to Seattle and they weren't seeing a penny. So they registered every working prostitute in Seattle as a union seamstress. And charged them all union dues. And the city capitalized on the money coming into town being spent on prostitution. Can we learn nothing from our past?
Well, I think there's a woman, I forget her name, she was like the most famous madam there as well. And she helped organize that and helped sort of bring all that together.
And the girls were protected. They had health coverage, right? I mean, you got to look to the past to find the answers for the future. John Curley, you're a gift. You are a gift from God. can you hang out for the balance of the hour with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
I appreciate that. Now, I know I dodged the Bob Ferguson story we had scheduled out of deference and respect to you. If you want to talk about that, I'd be glad to as we come back.
Okay.
But we also have some police solutions to maybe try to end violence in our young communities. We'll be back right after these. Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. John Curley sitting in the hot seat. Hot seat, hot seat, hot seat. How you doing, John?
Hot seat, hot seat. Yes, good. I'm good. Hey, thank you.
You're very welcome, my friend. It's no secret that teen crime has become a major issue in this city, in this state, in this country. Mm-hmm. I think we had a story last week about a 900% increase in violent crime among teens in the state of Washington in 2022 over 2021. Mm-hmm. That based largely in part on gun use and car theft. And I blame the Kia boys particularly, but they're just part of the problem. There's a story about a police detective who's trying to give kids something else to do, keep them busy. Kids wants them to turn to chess, the game, instead of violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a great thing in so much that I've often said, and Jack often says this too, the reason that we have so much violence in our youth, crime in our youth, disrespect in our youth is a breakdown of the family, breakdown of the home. Mm-hmm. And I can point directly to a lack of funding for the activities that you, me, Jack, everybody, Laura, participated in when we were younger, whether it be sports in schools, music in schools, community activities, boys and girls clubs, youth sports, whatever it is. Now, idle hands are the devil's tool. It's cliche, but it bears true. And I think this Seattle police detective trying to teach these kids the game of chess, I think is mm-hmm. a wonderful move. People are laughing at it, but I think it's great.
Yeah. I have seen her, Officer Cookie, working on this thing for 4 years or something like that.
Yeah, Cookie Bolden, a legend.
Yeah, I know
Seattle Police. Yeah,
she got some funding from some friends of mine, and it'd be great. Listen, anytime an adult can be in a child's life, that's terrific, and it's nice. I don't know how much money it costs, but if it, you know, whatever it is, you break it down, you just think, well, if three kids have a place to go where they feel loved and appreciated and recognized, it certainly makes their life a better place. And that's why the Boys and Girls Club is so great. And that's why, you know, Cookie's trying to do this in different parks to have these sort of chess things sort of set up and teach the kids chess. That's great. Listen, again, anytime an adult, a responsible adult, can be there to hear a kid, to listen to a child, to correct the behavior and to be someone that the kid looks up to, you just can't go wrong with those ingredients.
I couldn't agree more. Did you make it sure that your children, when they were growing up, John, were involved in various activities like clubs or team sports or those kind of things?
Oh yeah, they wanted to do all that sort of stuff, and that was a sort of a special thing. So if you behaved yourself, if you did your homework, if you were respectful to mom and dad, you did your chores around the house, then you got the good stuff, which was playing basketball or baseball or soccer. But as soon as you were not operating within the bounds of the rules we had placed in the home, that went away.
Yeah, I imagine your kids were good athletes.
Yeah, they were really great athletes. Really, really fun to watch them. And I, you know, when everybody, you know, well, we don't have kids, and you know, what's the greatest thing about having? There's so much work, you know, the spike. Oh my God, there's no payoff. I said, I'll tell you something. It's the stupidest thing. But you sit in that stand and you watch your 7-year-old throw three strikes, and you're like, it is the greatest thing in the world. You're like, whoa, my, coming out of the stands, just screaming and yelling. I mean, I was okay as an athlete, but when you watch your kid do well at anything, any sport, anytime your child succeeds, I don't know what it is, but it's a far greater joy than you would have ever experienced in your own life, whatever else you accomplish.
It's worth every drive, every check you got to write, every piece of a gear you got to buy. It's worth every penny tenfold. You know, my kids took part in water sports because we lived really close to our community pool, and there was a swim mm-hmm. team my kid was on, first for camaraderie and then a water polo team I made sure my kid took part in. I found out that, you know, team sports, I've said this many times before, but I'll say it 1,000 times more, kids learn more from team sports than anything else that they do. They learn accountability, responsibility. They learn how to lose with mm-hmm. with dignity, with grace, and with appreciation for a game well played, a fight well fought, those things. And, you know, I remember when my youngest wanted to quit swim team because they weren't the fastest kid in the pool ever, mm-hmm. you know, part of the second relay team in their high school swim team, right?
Sure.
There's no accolades. There's no ribbons. Nobody's going to state from her team.
Yeah.
But I said to him, Darby, you know, 20 years from now, there's going to be one person remembers who the fastest kid in the pool was. And that's the fastest kid in the pool. He's going to be telling everybody at the bar that he was the fastest kid in the pool in the Shorewood, the school district, blah, 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 blah. But they will always remember you as their teammate for being supportive, mm-hmm. you know, for being always a positive influence on a positive attitude about whatever you did. So that's the skill set you're learning today that's going to, you're going to carry into everything you do, every job you ever have, every relationship you ever have. You're going to, these are the skills that matter, not who is the fastest kid in the pool. So I commend Cookie Bolden for making sure these kids have something that they can take pride in. I mean, when you learn to play the game of chess and you get good at chess, and anybody you'd be amazed at some of the people that just excel at chess. Their minds just work. Yes. And when you get that, when you've got that skill set and you say, man, I'm finally good at something, you know, that's a treasure.
Yeah. I was reading a study about kids that get into crime in eighth grade, seventh and eighth grade, that if they succeed at robbing somebody, it's a success.
Yeah, no doubt.
And isn't that a bizarre sort of twist that they don't really have a lot of successes in their life? They're failing a whole bunch of stuff. They're always behind, last in class. They're getting Fs and a whole bunch of stuff. But they can go out and rob something. At least they got something. I mean, as terrible as that is, at least in their mind, they have succeeded at something.
Yeah, and so, the same chemical in your brain that has a success in a chess match or a baseball game, that same reward to your brain comes from accomplishment of a jack in a car or robbing an old woman of their purse. It's a chemical thing in your brain. So when you replace that with something worthwhile and constructive, otherwise that void gets filled with the crime that most kids seem to turn to these days.
The only cautionary note is the amount of time and money that parents spend on their kids when it comes to sports. Because I had seen it when I was a coach. I was coaching 7- and 8-year-old football, and you could call it football.
Yeah, to play the flag, right?
Not flag, tackle. Tackle, nice. Yeah. And it was amazing to see those dads. I mean, they were really into it. I mean,
living vicariously through their kids.
Yeah. Spike, so here's what they do. I don't know if they're still doing this, but if you're coaching, you get your kid on the team, right? Mm-hmm. So what they do is they have tryouts, 2 days of tryouts. You sit through a clipboard. Waz and I, my other fellow coach, we'd have our little clipboard around. Okay, that kid's pretty fast. That kid's pretty quick. That kid's got good hands. So we'd make our list of who we want on the team. So the day they come to draft and we go to some dad's house, and all of a sudden all these guys start walking in. There must be like 28, 30 guys in there. And just Waz and I sitting. There's the red team, the black team, and the white team. I think we were the red team, if I remember. And we start to pick out the kids we want. We'll take Erickson. That's my kid. Oh, okay. We'll take Gallagher. That's my kid. Okay, we'll take Hernandez. That's my kid. So I realized, wow, look at all the coaches the other teams have. I said, what do you coach? Guys, I coach offensive right line, primarily working with the guards and tackles. I'm like, really? Samuel got his coaching staff of like 15 guys.
Interior line coach for 7-year-olds? Yeah. Sure you do.
I said, you're going to go to the practices. You're going to be there Monday through Friday in the rain. Really? That's how they filled it up. And it happened to us 1 year, and then it happened to us again the second year. And I remember saying to the parents, guys, come on in. I'm going to give everybody an opportunity. This is our team. I had them running around. Those are the other teams. You can see they're quite large and they seem quite fast and very athletic and stuff. I tell you right now, if you want to take your kid off this team and put him on those other teams, you can do that because we're not going to win a game. Maybe we'll win one game. Maybe. But we're going to learn a lot about losing. This could be a master class in losing.
That's so valuable if you can find another way to sell that to people. You know? You should remember the agony defeat guy on the ski jump on ABC's Wide World of Sports?
Sure.
Remember that guy bouncing down the ice?
People couldn't wait for that guy to fall.
Best part of my Saturdays. It's the Jack and Spike Show with John Curley sitting in. When this Bellingham kid who ate two boxes of crackers, let's talk about that when we get back. Because I think
we need to get to that.
We need to give this kid some time. We'll be right back after these. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Again, Jack Stein had to take a little time, catch his breath. John Curley sitting in this hour. John, I appreciate that. I know you got the whole show ahead of you.
That's all right. Get warmed up.
Hour of your day, my friend. So, Laura, help me figure out this kid in Bellingham. Well, first off, I think kids get too much attention from and focus too much on their social media feed and getting clicks and likes and going viral. But here's a young man from Bellingham, Washington, who, from what I can gather, he ate two boxes of crackers with no water. Was there a challenge involved?
He issued the challenge to himself. He was posting flyers that were saying, come watch me eat these two boxes of crackers without water or die.
Oh, really? Oh, well, he's being facetious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is there audio?
I do have audio of the moment of...
Of completion?
Yeah, I didn't want to say it like that, but okay. Well,
very emotional. Very emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
One more cracker! One more cracker! One more cracker! One more cracker! Yeah!
With that, he pushes over the small, crappy-looking table, arms in the air, as the crowd cheers him on.
30 strong.
I love this story because it's so completely absurd. I also like the fact that the people that were watching him were giving him, looks like, 30 feet of space between him and the table. Not that anything's going to happen to him, but it's absurd. And I commend him for the absolute sort of ridiculousness of the entire exercise. And the fact that people are standing and cheering him on, it was just silly. But
have you ever done
silliness.
I worry that he attempted this without emergency people, EMTs on site.
Yeah, well, there's an enormous body of water right in front of him.
You ever try to drink salt water? I think he'd be more dangerous putting his face in the sound and trying to quench his. You can dry yourself out eating crackers to the point of physical danger, can't you?
No, it makes it even better. I mean, just I guess you know. I wonder if it would be fun to talk to him on the air because I think he probably has a very wry sense of humor. Like, what do you think the silliest, dumbest thing I could possibly do that people would show up for? You know, it's like a.
Have you ever been goaded?
It's almost like it's like performance art, right?
It is. That's a great assessment of it. It is performance art. I wonder how many views the kid's got. I hope it's in the tens of thousands.
So it's a one down lock camera. I don't know how many people are going to have a lot of patience for him because there's not a lot of drama. It's just him picking up, you know,
crackers
a few at a time and stuffing them in his face. And there's no close up on him. It doesn't look like he's struggling to keep them all down.
There's no ring girl walking around. Five to go. Three to go.
No. Good for him.
Did you ever do anything stupid like that at the
I've tried three times to get in the Guinness World Book of Records with dumb stuff like that. I don't think that's in there. You probably need to eat a whole lot.
So
I tried to do the most amount of water skiers pull behind one boat for one nautical mile. Failed miserably on the 7th of October. The year was 2000. Yeah. Water skiers came in from all around the country to try to do that.
Was this here in the Northwest?
Yeah, Lake Washington. Lake Washington. Yeah. We got a boat from this guy who had a boat up in Alaska, and Nichols Brothers Boat Building built two swing arms onto the back of the thing. So it
comes
swing
to boom out
300 feet wide. Yeah. It was so funny because the night before, the guy that owned the boat was like, wait a minute, what do they do to my boat? I mean, he wasn't paying attention. And the lawyer was there like, you agreed to this. I agreed to this. What the hell? And we went down there, and Jones Soda was giving a couple of pennies for every bottle sold for a year to the Learning Disabilities Association in Washington. Skiers came in from Florida and from Minnesota and Wisconsin. And, boy, it was first 3 minutes was like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan. There were bodies everywhere. It was terrible because we didn't have enough power. The boat cavitated and it sucked up milfoil and air. We needed the screws to be able to pull. They had enough torque to get all the bodies out.
Did they try to add bodies? So you wanted to just try to hoist the whole crew out of the water at once?
No, that's what we tried. It wasn't what Australia did is they all stood on the boom, and when the boat got going at a certain amount of knots, everybody stepped back, right?
Okay.
Which is a lot easier. But we thought we had enough to pull everybody up and out of the water. We didn't. When I called the guy in Australia, he's like, how many people? I said 120. Don't do that. Do less than that. I said, no, we want to crush it so you guys never come anywhere near it. Did anybody get hurt? He said, well, one guy lost his thumb, but we think it was loose before he went in the water. The Aussies are an entirely different group of people. They really are. But we were unable to achieve the big world record for that one. It was a shame.
Have you ever wanted to revisit one of your attempts? Or what are the other two? He said you had three times.
Jumping jacks. I think it was like 38,000 or something like
Holy
that.
Holy cow. Then, what kind of time duration would that take?
That took, I got up to about almost 2 hours, and it's really hard, and I couldn't do it. Planking is 4 hours and 20 minutes or something like that, and then the world record for pull-ups is 63 in 1 minute. I was going to do that one, and then I actually met the guy that's got the world record for pull-ups in 24 hours, so I was talking to him about that one, too. So I got up to 53 pull-ups in 1 minute, but I could never get what that guy was able to do because he's the speed in which he does the first 15 is just remarkable. It's less than about a second, maybe less Holy than a cow. Second in each one. Yeah, it's nuts. He kind of throws himself down and then bounces back up again. So I tried to do the longest baby toenail, and that ended violently. Yeah.
ended violently. I don't even want to know.
I know exactly what you're saying, and I pity you having lived through the bad experience.
It wasn't me. It was the person who was holding my feet down at a kickboxing class, and I ended up cutting her wrist with my baby toenail.
Oh, my.
Oh, it's so gross.
Any footage of that?
No.
No pun intended.
No. And she didn't want to be my partner already, and then I was like,
And how long have you two been married? Happy little story from our friends at the Newlywed Game. John, thank you so much for the last hour, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
How much I appreciate it. John and Sherry will be right back after a few words, some national news, some local news. Andrew, my friend, thank you very, very much. Chris, well done, my friend. Chris hadn't even started yet. Look at him. He's ready to roll. Laura A+. I want to thank Chuck Ecker for coming in today. I want to thank Jack for listening. Listen to your heart, as the song goes. Here now is your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
You know, I have to start this by saying I'm Irish.
Irish?
Irish.
I told Brian I would never work with an Irish.